Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and today we're going to be talking about Rwanda. The Globe and Mail, a feature story, has caught our attention, and we're going to be talking to Portia Karegeya, the daughter of the gentleman whose picture you would find on the front page of the Globe, who was assassinated in South Africa. And we're going to get her comments on the article and what she thinks might be done in respect to the assassination of her father and the threats on the lives of other Rwandan leaders who are in exile. We will also talk today to Tiffany Dixon. She is former lawyer before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and also for the former Yugoslavia, and she is now an instructor, Political Science Division of the Hatfield School of Government, Portland State University. We're going to talk about the Ukraine, the latest developments there from the perspective of international law and whether or not, what sort of a government we have in Kiev. I'm starting to wonder what sort of government we have in Ottawa. We also, there's a bigger question, is what is that in Washington? So there's a lot of governments we need to ask about. But we are very fortunate now to have with us Portia Karegeya. Are you there, Portia?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We thought of you immediately when we saw the Weekend Globe and Mail, Canada's national paper, featured a story. With the lead to that is opponents of Rwandan President Paul Kagame are being targeted and killed around the world. A months-long multi-continent investigation reveals a ruthless murder-for-hire operation still very much in business. And that's in the focus section. On the page one is a photograph of your handsome father, and who was a victim murdered in South Africa on the New Year's Eve. I guess they've established that. The date, but now we were very fortunate to have you previously as a guest, and we're very anxious to know what do you think of this article? You must have gone over it closely to see what they had come up with.
I mean, I was pretty happy about the article, and I was glad that a paper like the Globe and Mail had printed it, and that it was pretty much front page news, because it's things that I think the world needs to know about. Mm-hmm. And read. And so I was very glad that it was finally out. I mean, I had, as it says in the article, my dad had been one of the ones who'd had the recordings go on and continue. So I'd heard them before, and there's quite a number on YouTube as well. They're just not very well publicized, and of course they're in Kinyarwanda, so if you don't speak it, it's not that interesting to you, or you won't understand anything.
Yeah.
So I knew these were out there, and I'm just glad they're getting the publicity that they are now.
Yeah. So, they go into the issues of why your father and General Yamwasa have been targeted, but there are so many others. They mentioned people in have been threatened in Sweden, Britain. Over the weekend, by the way, I think Faustin Togiri Mungu, the former prime minister, gave an interview in which it was revealed that he had been threatened as recent as last month. Can you explain the pathology, if that's what it is, of the present leader of the Rwandan government, that there's no pause, sign of second thought? They just seem to continue.
Well, the policy is basically that if you are an opponent, if you're an open dissenter to the regime, and if you are quite having, like my father and Kayumba, particularly unliked, because they had quite, big positions in the government back in the day, and they have insider information. Mm-hmm. And so if you are an opponent to Kagame, death is not, it's not off the table as a solution to your opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But we should remind you, you did, of course, that your father was once the head of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways people think of that as, well, it was somehow an immediate matter, but in looking at some of your father's statements, he wrote a very eloquent letter to the United Nations Security Council asking mm-hmm. them to look into the question of the instability and violence in Eastern Congo, which he attributed to the workings of Paul Kagame, but also he pointed out that he himself had been imprisoned in, was it 2007? When did he fall afoul of the government of Paul Kagame?
Well, I mean, there are varying degrees of falling afoul, I guess, because he actually attempted to leave his office in end of 2000, early 2001, I think it was. He asked to resign, and he was not allowed to resign because they said, well, no, there's nobody to replace you. Please stay, and we will try and train someone up or whatever. But that was basically the he was never someone who wasn't vocal about his opposition to the issues that were, you know, presenting themselves, and the way that the regime was going, like steadily moving towards a strong, you know, dictatorship. So he tried to quit, and then like in 2002 and 3 he was demoted, so to speak. And then eventually in 2005 he was detained for, I guess, that was a time when we didn't know where he was. He was just taken away for 5 months to somewhere. At one point my mother was able to see him, but she was told to sit across from him and just look at him to verify that he was alive.
Wow.
She couldn't actually speak to him. And so that was 5 months where, I mean, he may as well have been dead for all intents and purposes because we didn't know where he was. And so then he was released, sort of given a very stern warning by the president himself to, like, get in line and, you know, not associate with Kayumba, and because, you know, just many small issues, because he generally would say, no, I don't agree, which is not something that is done. You do not disagree with Kagame. At least now we know, really, you shouldn't do that. And then he was rearrested in 2006 on May 15th, and then there were formal charges placed of insubordination and desertion, and then he was sentenced to 18 months imprisonment.
Actually, from the sound of it, he was fortunate to get out alive the first time. I mean, given the way they operate. I'm thinking of Victoire Ingabire in this context. He refers to her quite sympathetically because he says there's no space permitted for opposition. People are simply accused of things. And I just wonder, after all, he was a very well-known gentleman. He was certainly known to the government of Uganda. He'd been a general. And didn't was no interest taken by neighboring states or governments in the West when your father was in that very dangerous situation the first time?
The first time, as I understand it, yes. In fact, the main reason that he was released after those 5 months was because it was sort of a sudden disappearance of him, and he had been working with quite a few in the international community in his positions, and there had been some queries as to where he was, wherever sort of the president was traveling, or they would ask Rwanda, oh, what has happened with Patrick? We hear he's in jail, and there was no real reason. And he was released, and he said to me that after he was released, after those 5 months, the president asked him, he's like, everywhere I go, they ask about you. It's as though you've been promoting yourself around the world. And he said, you have had me detained. How do you honestly think that I've been telling them to ask about me? You know where I've been these past 5 months. So it's just that sort of, you know, petty, like that was upsetting to him, that people would inquire after Karajaya. Why? Who was he? You know?
Yes.
So, yeah.
This is Portia Karajaya, daughter of Colonel Patrick Karajaya, who was assassinated in South Africa. And but I should mention, I'm sure you're following very closely, we're close to having a decision in the attempt on the life of General Yamwasa. And there's also been a breaking of relations, I assume that's still the case, between South Africa and Rwanda. What sort of things are you hoping, by the way, might begin to come to light? I noticed, for example, just that your father explained to the United Nations that the invasion, the attack on on Congo, has been cost millions of lives, actually, and has been horrific. Is it, Matters of that kind worrying to the present regime in Kigali, that that might turn into a serious kind of consideration, that the evidence that your people like your father and General Yamwasa might bring?
Well, I would imagine that it would be of concern to them. I have no idea what their reaction will be in the future. I mean, so far it's sort of been deny, 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 which is the general policy every time they're accused of anything. And how to get out of that situation, I honestly could not comment with any degree of, you know, accuracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing that I ever notice that they bring up with in regard to your father in order to rationalize their really strange attitude, morbid attitude towards your father and towards General Yamwasa, is they say, well, there was, in 2010, there was a grenade attack. By the way, I don't know if anybody ever established that there actually was one, but to bring to all this hunting and stalking and et cetera, with, when there's never been anybody walk into a courtroom to show what this is.
On the basis of those accusations, both everybody who founded the RNC was sentenced to 24 and 24 years, I think, in absentia in Kigali. I've seen video of the president saying that they have mountains of evidence, but I don't they just present it and then prove to us that, you know, they did this? And even then, I don't know how it justifies completely disrespecting, like, the sovereignty of another country and going in to commit actual murder, even though you justify it on the basis that, you know, they are terrorists. They are still international rules, and you do not go into another person's sovereign territory and kill their refugees.
No. As a matter of fact, there are appropriate forums where these matters could be taken, and there's plenty of people, most of them living in, many of them in the Congo, who would like to have Mr. Kagame himself face some charges. And again, there are forums. If there was if you had a legitimate government behaving according to the ordinary norms of conduct, you would expect. Your father made some nice, interesting psychological observation about Paul Kagame. He said he's a micromanager. So he says you have to know that this man, whenever there is anything going on, whether it's a formation of a rebel Congo group anywhere down the line, he micromanages. He knows about all these things and interferes. Is that your impression of him, or what you know from your own experience?
That's what I know that from my father. So from coming from me, that would be hearsay. But it is, as far as I know, that is the case. From what I've heard from my father and Kayumba and everyone, and also just from Rwanda's not a very big country. In fact, it's worth it to mention that it's quite small, and so it's the power is concentrated in this very small group of people, and it's not a stretch to say that one man could control the state institutions, because they actually aren't that large.
Yeah. By the way, I do hope everyone. Fortunately, with the internet now, it's possible to see some of the writings and comments of your father. The one that's best known, I believe, is that his letter to Mr. Coe, where he basically outlines what he would like to see done. It's interesting that he simply says, despite all allegations to the contrary, that he would like to see and is striving for a Rwanda in which there are multiple parties and there is opposition is permitted. And he expresses sympathy for the situation I mentioned before of Ingabire. Did that resonate, do you know, with governments, for example? South African officials were aware of the presence of your father. There were other governments in the region, some of whom, by the way, are beginning to raise similar notions. Do you know how your father's thinking was being received in the region and amongst other Rwandans?
Within, I can't really say that much because I haven't been there in such a long time. And from just what I know from the sentiment is people do have, like, a lot of fear, and, like, from within you really can't be opposed. And I would imagine that with people who live with such fear, you'd want to be liberated, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But with the region in general, I know that the Congo is very frustrated with... I'm sort of reticent to make these broad statements about
yes.
these countries, as I represent no one.
Yes.
I'm simply my father's daughter. But mm-hmm. They are... The problem with the way that Kagame is operating is it does cause quite a lot of instability in the region.
Yeah,
and so to that extent, I would say that, yes, the general feeling around the way that he's running things is not positive.
Yeah,
I'm trying to keep it as general as possible,
yes,
so not
well,
to be accused of speaking on behalf of these people.
Right. Well, on two occasions, they did enter the Congo, and again, your father's one of the best witnesses on the matter. He said that, that actually the entry of the Rwandan forces into the Congo was opposed by a number of individuals, including himself, because of the possible ugly consequences. And that this is a, you know, those who claim they'd like to see, and like the American government says it would like to see stability, if it's put at his doorstep, they should, we should be asking the Ottawa and Washington and others to look at their friend. If they're looking for stability, they ought to rein him in.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah. Do you have, in light of this Globe story, what would you hope might occur here? Do you think this will? Can you give us your thoughts about what, how this, what you know of the reactions are and will be? To this kind of revelation in a major newspaper?
I honestly don't know, and I can't wait to see. I would hope that it would, you know, go the way that I would want it to go, which is, you know, there'd be more than just sort of words of, like, we are disappointed with, we hope that, you know? Because when the M23 report came out in 2012, there was a lot of, you know, noise, and people were upset for a while, and people withdrew funding and aid from Kigali, but then I think it was within a matter of like 2 weeks or less than a month, like all the suspended aid was back on again. And I don't really know what goes into geopolitics and, you know, all the mm-hmm. how they work these things out behind. I'm not a politician, you know, so
how fortunate
I would. How fortunate.
Cling to your sanity.
Exactly. Yeah. So we you just have to wait and see how it plays itself out, but I just don't see it, at least with this. Thank goodness that it was, like, well investigated. The proof is there. They've got the actual people. Because as you know, like, as I said earlier, these recordings were around, and we mm. could say that. Like, I could go up to someone and say, oh, but, you know, I know that they plan assassinations. But mm. you couldn't really reveal it so much, because who are the people in the recordings? They don't maybe want to be revealed. You implicate a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And now that there's been, like, a solid, reputable publication by reputable journalists who've looked into it, and they've, you know, they know their sources, and it's there. It's very difficult for them to sort of deny their way out of this one.
Yes.
So that's a good thing, I think.
Yes. Well, Portia Carrigay, I agree with you. I hope that that they will say, if someone says it's not so, well, let's have an investigation.
Exactly. And I hope there's a genuine investigation into it as well.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
We're certainly very grateful to talk to you, and I find it very encouraging. And I'm glad that you're hopeful on the matter, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye bye. That's Portia Carrigay, a daughter of Colonel Patrick Carrigay. Colonel Patrick Carrigay was strangled in a hotel in South Africa on New Year's Eve. There were, if you want to see you ought to take a close look at how the members of the government of Rwanda reacted to his death. It was an expression of rather uncivilized conduct. It's so much so that even Washington turned up his nose and said they'd rather he hadn't done that. Phil, I think you have an announcement, and we're going to be in touch with... Tiffan Dixon.
Yes, this is for our listeners in Hamilton. Our good friend
anywhere in Canada that got a car or a plane, right?
Well, yeah, it's an important cultural center, and actually our good friend Rob Rolfe, who was a poet who has appeared many times on the Taylor Report, will be reading from his latest volume, Beyond Mudtown, and of course the volume will be for sale. It'll be on Saturday night, May the 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Homegrown Hamilton, 29 King William Street. There's a good King William Street.
It goes by another name in other places.
Yes, it does. But in Hamilton, it's King William Street. It's 27 King William Street, and it's on Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. And Beyond Mudtown, Rob Rolfe's third volume of poetry, will be on sale at a discounted price of $15. And Rob has stated that he's dedicating the reading to the memory of Peter Leibovich, who, of course, was a giant in Hamilton, and we still mourn his loss.
Yeah. He was known. He'd been a postal worker leader, steel workers leader, very active NDP, anti-war, etc. He would be shocked and appalled at the present situation that we are witnessing in Canadian politics, not merely to do with what's going on in Ukraine, which he would be focused on, but he would like to know why no one here has said anything.